Good morning, everyone. Curry County Board of County Commission meeting will now come to order. Anybody has any cell phones or any other audible devices, if you'd silence them now, it's not to disrupt the rest of the meeting. We appreciate it. If you'd stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Moving along now to item number three. This is discussion and possible action, the approval of the agenda for this date, September the 5th, 2017. Mr. Osborne, are there any changes or amendments to make to today's agenda?
We got a couple. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're asking that we continue item 25, that is the staple parcel map, 26 AUECC special use permit, and 27 AII variance. And then we're also asking that items 12 and 13 will be pushed off to a later time during today's meeting until County Manager Pat Whitten can arrive and participate in those two items. And again, that would be 12 and 13.
All right. Very good. Any other changes or amendments to make today? Hearing none? Any public comment?
It would be on item 22.
And I do want to say for items 25, 26, and 27, those items will be continued to the September 19 County Commission meeting here at the courthouse.
Very good. Okay. And item number 22. And this item here with the Sheriff's License Board first reading. There is no Sheriff's License Board, so it will be License Board first reading. We'll just strike Sheriff's from the language there. Any public comment regarding today's agenda? Ms. Bart?
Consent agenda item, Hobart, Story County Resident. Is there a consent agenda item number, Roman numeral 3? Could we bring that out to the regular agenda so that we can understand what it is?
Sure.
Thank you.
Which item is that?
3. Off the consent, Roman numeral 3.
This is the amendment to the CRIJV. Okay. Any other public comment? Hearing none, if I can go ahead and get a motion to approve this with the changes that have been made.
I'll make a motion to approve today's agenda for September 5, 2017, with the noted changes to continue items 25, 26, 27 to the September 19th commissioner meeting 2017 to be held here in this courtroom. And then we will move item 12 and 13 out until County Manager Whitten appears, if he would like to speak on those items. We will strike the word sheriff from item 21.
22.
Or 22?
Yeah. Okay.
22. And bring item 3 to today's agenda item from the consent agenda.
It would be actually 21 and 22. You're right.
21 and 22.
Yeah, because we have sheriffs on both of those.
Okay,
lines.
So I'll change. I'll correct that to strike sheriff from item 21 and 22.
Okay.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Moving second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving on now to item number 4. Discussion and possible action. This is approval of the minutes for August the 1st, 2017. Any public comment regarding the minutes? Hearing none? For approval?
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes for August 1st, 2017.
Second the motion.
I'm moving second to approve the minutes for August the 1st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 5, the consent agenda. Is there any other public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, if I get a motion to approve this, noticing that we're going to go ahead and hear Roman numeral 3 separately.
I'll make a motion to approve today's consent agenda with noting that we will go ahead and hear item Roman numeral 3 today.
Second.
Moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, let's go ahead and hear consent agenda number 5, Roman numeral number 3. So, we don't have Ms. Seddon in the audience today. So, Ms. Bard, would you like to approach the podium and ask us what your concern is regarding this?
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. It's not a concern so much as wanting to understand what happened and what is, you know, what happened, and have it be on the consent agenda and what it is, and just have it on record.
Okay.
What this is about, that's all.
All right. These parcels should have been listed as exempt status, and they weren't. So the tax bills were sent out to the TRIGID for these parcels. So this is to correct that, to come back and say that these are tax exempt, and therefore we have to, these have to be removed from the tax.
And so a GID is exempt from any property taxes or use taxes or anything like that?
Because GID is a government.
Okay.
Yes.
And so the GID was commissioned when? I mean, if this is the first, if it's been in operation for years and years and years, ostensibly, they haven't been getting a tax bill. So what happened this time that they got a tax bill that is in error?
It was a clerical error when the roll was opened. It should have carried over from the prior year when they were marked exempt, and it just didn't get picked up.
Okay, so this is all of their parcels. There are some parcels that got taxed and others that didn't, so the whole thing just blew up. Okay, fine.
Okay. Any other public comment regarding consent agenda item 5, Roman number 3? If not, I get a motion now to approve this.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda item 5-Roman numeral 3 for the approval of amendments to the TRIGID secure tax parcels. Parcels are exempt.
Second your motion.
Moved and second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 6. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. Public comment on these. We'll start on the right side of the room there. Sheriff Antonoro. Okay. We'll go over to the Director of Security, Ms. Keener.
Nothing to say.
Over to Community Relations, Director Sherry Nevin.
Good morning, Sherry Nevin, for the record. We have two upcoming flu shot clinics scheduled. We're coming into that season, unfortunately. The first one will take place this Thursday, September 7th, from 9 to 11 a.m. here at our senior center in Virginia City. The second one will take place Wednesday, September 13th, again from 9 to 11 at the Lockwood Community Center. And the next one will be held on October 4th from 11 to 2 at the Mark Twain Community Center. I had an inquiry to schedule a clinic in the Virginia City Highlands, and we're still trying to work with a couple folks out there to get something scheduled to bring a clinic out there. So it's just availability and finding a time that's going to be work for everyone. We have a groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of the next phases of the Virginia City Sewer Improvement Project coming up on Monday, September 11th at 9 a.m. We're going to hold that at the corner of Washington and R Streets there by the high school. There's a kiosk for a walking trail. We'll be right there. That is also the commemoration of 9/11 that day, so we'll do a little short kind of remembrance of that, and we ask that you join us for the ceremony. We're going to keep it very short, less than 1 hour. So we're excited to get this project kicked off. It's been a long time in the making. So there will be some slight interruptions, you know, to travel around town as they're working on this, you know, things that we can't avoid, but we'll get the work done and move on. So the Senior Center is also hosting an open house on September 21st, coming up in a couple weeks from 5 to 7 p.m. They invite you to stop by and join them, have some food and drinks, and get to know about the different programs offered at the Senior Center. Also a chance to meet Stacy Gilbert, the director. She's been there almost a year already, so time is going by real fast, and she's made some positive improvements at the center. So I'm happy to have her and take a look what they've got going on. The other thing that I wanted to make mention of is due to Hurricane Harvey, state of Nevada is actually host to a FEMA call center in Carson City. They're looking to hire upwards of 1,000 people to staff this call center. I actually toured it yesterday. It's quite an operation. They got a small group coming in, about 50 people right now. But those jobs are available. They're paying about $19 an hour. So they're looking for bodies here that want employment. They're about 10-hour shifts, temporary. It's not a long-term thing. But if someone is looking for work, they're located in Carson City. Just go online. We have a link on our county Facebook page where people can go and apply for those jobs. So another opportunity to help out the state of Nevada while helping out folks in Texas. So.
Any questions for Sherry? Okay, great. Thank you, Sherry. All right. Emergency Management Director, Joe Curtis.
Nothing at this time. I do have an item today to bring up item number 9.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Joe. Our Tourism Director, VCTC, Danny Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. It's that time of year. As a reminder that if you happen to see a animal that kind of looks like a horse, that's got a couple extra humps on the back there walking through town, someone's probably let them out again, and we'll get the call from dispatch. That seems to happen about every year, that there's a camel on the loose in Virginia City, which could happen starting today. So the animals will be here in just a couple hours. We're going to help them get situated, and then we'll start getting ready for camel races. A couple things with camel races is tickets are great right now. The advanced ticket sales. We added the fourth show for this year, so instead of three, we have two on Saturday, giving us a four total. And again, it seems to be working out well with the public. We're actually going to be working with the school district as well on using some of the buses. We're going to work out a fundraising element there so they can help us move people a little bit more efficient. But, you know, it's looking like it's going to be all hands on deck and a full crowd for this weekend. So you'll see some fundraisers for parking, too, with some of the local community groups. We'll be doing fundraising parking and then, of course, the free shuttle. But that kind of kicks off. Actually, this last weekend kicked off a whole month of September. It is our busiest month for events. So we have, you know, you got the Ferrari races and the 100-mile endurance horse race coming the weekend after. It's 50 years for them. So it's our 50th anniversary, and they're trying to be a little more proactive and get out so the public has a chance to see them. But it's tough when they start at 5 a.m. and go 100 miles on a horse. You know, there's not a lot of opportunity for spectators. But again, that would wind up our busiest month in for our special events, which leads me to my final thing is just an informational thing. We kind of touched base with the district attorney's office in regards to our regional traffic committee, if you will, just to kind of see what we can and can't do in regards to the congested and the no parking that we're seeing more and more issues here in BC with the events getting bigger and bigger with the development of the F Street corridor and the traffic patterns down there are growing. So we're going to have myself, Public Works, Sheriff's Office, Fire Department, kind of do a little subcommittee, advisory, if you will, come up with some ideas and some suggestions to come back to the board and let you know that we're working on to help alleviate some of the issues we're seeing out there. That's all I got.
Any questions for Dave?
No. There's been a slew of advertisement on the news starting over the weekend that I heard on the camel races, so. A lot of publicity there.
It's going very well, yeah. It's just that we did change it up a little bit, the show, and added that fourth show, but Pairs up very nicely with balloon races and makes the whole region a pretty good place to be. And the temperature is going to be cool, too, so it should be a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. All right, over to the fire department. Chief Nevin.
Good morning. For the record, Jeff Nevin. Just a couple of things. I'm sure you probably all noticed about 2.5 weeks ago we had a little fire down Six Mile Canyon. Ended up being 185 acres. At the time, we thought there might be a threat to town. Thankfully, there was no wind on it that day, and we had enough. We were the only show in town that day, so we had plenty of resources on hand to help us out and take care of that. So we kept it in the box that we drew on it, so that went according to plan, bigger plan than we'd like, but it was still there. As we can tell, our fuel conditions, the fuel loading is high and dry. The fine fuels are 200 to 300% loading versus previous years, so it's thick and it's dry, and all that stuff is now dead. The 1,000-hour fuels are at 6 to 10% of their fuel moisture, so, and that's the big stuff, small trees, large brush, things like that. So. And to lead into that, possibility of thunderstorms starting today through Thursday, so that could hopefully rain with it, but there is a possibility of lightning before the rain comes, so we'll be keeping an eye out for that. We sent a brush truck down to the Slinkard Fire, just over the state line in the Colville-Walker area last Wednesday. They've since been reassigned to a larger fire in the Central California, Southern California area, down near Madera. We also have our bulldozer out near Fallon at the Tungsten Fire, which is almost 10,000 acres at this point, so they're helping them out. As Denny alluded to, special event season is here, and that will keep us busy for the remainder of the month, extra staffing for that stuff, especially the camel races, street vibrations, so be a busy month for us. And just a reminder, school is in session, so we'd remind everybody to watch your speeds in the school zones, 15 miles an hour, and to watch for kids and parents walking to school in the morning. Any questions?
Okay,
thank you.
Nope. Thank you, Jeff.
I do, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, the cheatgrass, it's always been an issue. And there's been different attempts, maybe have sheep come in and graze and stuff like that. Is there any the Forest Service or anybody doing anything to curb the cheatgrass? Is there any programs out there?
The Forest Service did. I don't know if they still do it. I can check on it and see. But about, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, they had cooperation, I think, with the city of Carson. They actually ran the sheep along Sea Hill and through that area to kind of create a break. I don't know how effective it really was. We've had the sheep come over the top of Mount Davidson and down every single year for the past, I don't know, probably 10 years that I know of. And, you know, they do create a little bit of space up there, but the fuel up there is pretty sparse. So, but there's not really any concrete or solid evidence that it helps or hinders. So. You bet.
Thanks, Chief. All right. Director of Planning and Human Resources, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioners. Just a few things. The lands bill that applies to Virginia City, Gold Hill, and a parcel down in Mark Twain is still moving forward, slow. It's still moving at the pace of federal government, which is very slow. We're still working with that. Our lobbyists from the Porter Group and myself and our group have been working with them on possibly being able to merge this into the next round of bills in Congress. There is an Eastern Nevada bill that has to do with lands transfer that maybe we are able to roll this into and get some kind of effective bill passed. And the new bill, really, as I've talked about before, will be adjusted really to not be tied really to the town site of Virginia City, but more of just the area around Virginia City through section, township, and range. And that one item alone really will probably help our lands bill come along and reduce a lot of title issues that we have with our private property owners here in town and in Gold Hill and then down there in Mark Twain. I'll let you know the next Planning Commission meeting. We're holding one on September 14. This is a different than normal meeting, but it's instead of the first or third Thursday of the month, it's being held the second Thursday of the month in order to align with applicants who have requested continuances. We'll have AUECC on that. We'll have Title 17 and 16 and design standards update on that, and then also the residential use that applies in the commercial residential zone. There will be some updates on that. Most of the changes in Title 17, which are the zoning ordinance, will be cleanup and that sort of thing. And then last, or not last, but here in Mark Twain, we're still working with the Carson Water Subconservancy District. That district now is in its phase of working through the Mark Twain Story County area and the Lyon County side of Mark Twain for the flood mitigation study. This will be a comprehensive study that we're going through RFQ right now. We anticipate the project will be about $300,000 or more just to do the study for Mark Twain and trying to get all of the drainages and all of the issues that are down there studied to an effect that we'd be able to actually do something about flooding in that area in the near future. So that should be out in 2018, next year, where that RFQ is completed. We have a chance to review qualified applicants to do the study, and we'll be working with them on that, and I'll keep you updated on the next stage. A couple of our planning commissioners have asked to attend a Nevada APA, American Planning Association, conference in Carson City. This conference has a lot of education classes and things for them to attend and learn how to be good planning commissioners, learn the basics of planning, and learn about some of the issues that not only Story County is facing, but the whole region is, as far as housing and transportation and kind of urban infill and those sorts of things. So I think that'll be great, and I appreciate them taking their time. As you know, they're a voluntary group in essence, that they take their time to go over and beyond to serve our community. And then last but not least, Denny brought up with a parking lot next door that we've had groups and that sort of thing with like the high school charging a small admission during certain special events and then order to provide public transportation to and from that parking lot and to events throughout town. I've had some folks ask me, and I know others in this room have, how come the county's charging for the parking lot? We're not. We don't charge for parking for the parking lot. We don't intend to, that it was not the plan of that parking lot. What we do is we allow the high school and maybe one or two other groups for their purposes of helping out with school functions to have fundraisers in that area and in order to provide transportation for the people that can park there and get down to F Street and other areas on the periphery of town where events are taking place. So I just wanted to make a note of that, that that's what we've been doing over there. And I appreciate Danny working hard with that and transportation. Denny's indicated that really you can get anywhere you need to in this town during these major events with no trouble whatsoever with multiple trams and trolleys and other things running around town. That's it. Thank you.
Question. The September 14th planning meeting, mm-hmm. Where is that going to be held?
It's going to be here at the courthouse. Okay.
Will that be in lieu of the 21st meeting? Or
it would be.
Okay. Austin, we're at the comptroller's office. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. Last week, Austin Osborne, myself, and Jennifer McCain had a tremendous meeting with Marty Johnson, who is our contractor on the pipeline project. As you know, we have a myriad of questions and comments and confusing as is Marty pretty much put a lot of it in perspective as to where our role in this thing, not only physically but financially. And so consequently, he gave us some insurances and is going to keep working on this. This is a process, a living, breathing process, because it seems like every other week something changes on it. But he did give us a lot of great information so we can sit and keep track of where we think our liability is going to be in this project. The next commission meeting, we're probably going to have some comments and some additional review of property tax relief. Probably that will be given by staff, probably not by me. And that will be ready. I've been given an okay to go get an elk. But if I get that early enough, I'll be back. However, with the Irish luck that I have, I could be out there for a very, very long time. In closing, I do have almost a 50-year confession to make. I did let the camels out of the camel barn. I was in college studying in an advanced degree of stupidity. And consequently, I came up and I let those out about 3 years in a row. And it was not for malicious purposes. But at that point in time, the Red Dog was a pretty hot place to go. And they served a lot of other things besides alcohol, probably, in that building, in the former proprietors. So I would let them out and run like hell down there and just kind of sit and watch those camels stick their head into that building with all these people on hallucinogenics, and it was quite fun. I did finally get caught because I had to spend a considerable amount of time in the military, and nothing happened. So when I came back out, I thought, maybe one more time, and Sheriff Bob got me and said, I can't do that anymore. So that's my confession for the day.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Statute of limitations right out on here?
You know, I'm just thinking the same thing. Yes. There's a lot of crimes in that activity.
Went to DA's office. Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
DA Langer?
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
Madam Clerk? Nothing? All right, that concludes our staff reports. We'll move on now to item number 7. These are board comments. We'll take no action or public comment. So down to my far left, Commissioner Gilman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity. I wanted to take a few moments this morning and report on an event that took place back on August the 28th here in Story County. We had the ribbon cutting ceremony for the USA Parkway. And it was attended by pretty much everyone in the state. The governor was there and Steve Hill from GOED. And we had a lot of dignitaries from Wine County. Of course, all of us were there from Story County. I think they had 10 speakers and probably 200 to 250 people in the audience. It was a warm day, and it started about 11 o'clock. And so interesting in that there were probably some sunburns because it went on for quite a long period of time. But a lot of celebration. I enjoyed all of the speakers. Governor Sandoval, and I would paraphrase his comments, were wonderful. But basically, he identified Story County and the Tolarino Industrial Center as the center of the economic engine driving development and prosperity in Northern Nevada. That it was all happening right out there on USA Parkway in Story County. And it was a wonderful compliment for our county and the job that's been done by the leadership and what has happened basically with the opening of the highway. And of course, you know, everybody wanted to acknowledge that Tesla was out there and what they're doing, and they talked about Switch and they talked about Google and others, probably about 150 companies out there today. So it was interesting to me when that event took place. The following days, there was a report in our Nevada appeal, and they reported sales tax that they had reported the taxable sales, and they singled out Story County as having set a new record, basically the smallest county in the state, and we generated over $1.6 billion in taxable, reported taxable sales in last fiscal year. And so it came to mind with me that Switch built one building out there, and of course Tesla was busy putting up about 30% of what they're going to build, and they're in about 8 million feet today. Of course, Google hasn't even started, and along with others that are in the park. So if we're at a 500% increase from previous fiscal year, and this fiscal year has generated about $1.6 billion, and only really one of the companies that are out there are heavily involved in development today, generating taxable sales. So I've been musing on the fact that new business that wasn't even addressed there, for example, is Chip Bowlby and their development company. They're doing the Harrah's development in downtown Reno. They closed about 2 weeks ago on 800 acres of what they're now calling the Tahoe-Reno Tech Center. And they'll be focusing in and around Google just on high-tech development, not typical industrial, which has very valuable buildings and a lot of development costs that go into it and generating the kind of companies we're looking for. In addition to that, there's a group called Blockchains. And Blockchains is a support group for Bitcoin, for those of you that are studying the Bitcoin industry. They're now purchasing over 3,000 acres for a new campus park for Blockchains. And as a matter of fact, we're meeting tomorrow to increase that land by to even a larger footprint. And it was fun because on the day of the, a year ago, about 14 months ago, the governor was here in Story County, and we had the shovel kickoff for the construction of that highway. And believe it or not, that construction took place with NDOT, and all of our county personnel and everybody involved. And in 14 months, basically, we opened a four-lane highway all the way to Highway 50. And what was interesting to me is on the day of the shovel breaking, 14 months ago, we were sitting on a site, and I told the audience at that point that we were on a site, and I couldn't name the company. They hadn't closed escrow yet. But that there would be an announcement coming soon on the very site we were on. Well, that turned out to be Google. The morning of the 28th, we went into escrow with a brand new company in 1,200 acres in Story County. It's right on the county line. It's at the end of USA Parkway in a special valley down there. And this group are what I would call the epitome of high-tech investment coming out of Silicon Valley. It's really called Silicon Valley East. 1,200 acres of research and development on nanotechnology. And I can't go deeper into that because of the NDAs that have been signed, but nanotechnology is the cutting edge of new products that are going to revolutionize the entire globe. And it looks like at this point that Story County will host that incredible research and development group. So the opening of our USA Parkway and all of the effort that's gone into it over the last 15, 18 years here in Story County is really going to pay dividends for our little Story County. And last fiscal year, $1.6 billion in reported taxable sales. We aren't even started yet. It's incredible.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner McGuffey.
Yes. First, a brief update on the zip code issue. Of course, since the Porter Group was here and gave their presentation to the commission, nothing's really moved on that because Congress has been out. And so they just came back, I think, today. Yeah, today. So they're hoping, just as Congressman Hammonday has stated, that he's hoping to have something moving by Nevada Day. So that's where it stands. I had a NACO meeting a week and a half ago. NACO, the board unanimously voted for Dagny Stapleton. She's the deputy director there to take over the executive director position that Jeff Fontaine is abandoning. That'll be effective October 1st. Jeff has moved on to a position with the Central Nevada Water District, or commission, I guess what it is. There was also a presentation by a company called Wi-Fi in the Park. Their goal is to supply all the state parks with Wi-Fi. It's going to be great for emergencies and whatever, or just if you want to read your notepad while you're out camping in the national parks here. So that's kind of in motion. And then there was a 211 briefing reminding all that this service is free. If you call 211, you can find a doctor, you can find information about health, vital health is what they call it, and human service programs. So it's a free thing. If you're not quite sure what's all there, you can get online, and it'll kind of help you out as well. But it is a free service. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner McGuffey. Following up on Commissioner Gilman's statement about blockchain, this last weekend on CNBC, one of the business channels, they did a story on blockchain and how it's revolutionizing that industry. So it's great that you're coming to Story County. Yeah. That's great. Those of you who were here over the Labor Day weekend, I hope you had a nice weekend. The parade was terrific yesterday. We had the Battle of the North and South, Daniel, and once again, the Union Army prevailed. They captured the Confederate flag, but they didn't destroy it. They're going to let them use it again next year. I'd like to go ahead and give remembrance to an old friend of ours. She was a Gold Hill resident during her youth. Her family was here for many years in the mining industry. That's Kathleen McFarland. Those of us who knew her from Virginia City, it was Kathleen Hess. And her dad was a hard rock miner. Her brothers are Greg and Raleigh, and a younger sister, Lori. She went to most of her schooling in Reno, and we would see her with her younger sister and Mary Marks from the Marks family up here, working at Harris downtown Reno in their younger days. And later years, we would see her smiling face at the Liberty Bell, who would be our server there. So Kathy left us last week, only 64 years old. So our condolences to her brothers and her sister. So we'll move on now to item number 8. This is discussion only. We'll take no action. Provide an overview of the State of Nevada Community Development Block Grant Program for the upcoming 2008 grant application cycle. So Sherry Nevin will take the lead on this.
Good morning. Sherry Nevin again for the record. This is an annual presentation that we make regarding the State of Nevada Community Development Block Grant Program. I give you an overview of the program, past projects that have been funded in Story County, how to apply, what's eligible, what's not eligible, how the funds can be used, etc. So in promoting community development in rural Nevada, the Rural Community Development Division of the GOED, through the Governor's Office of Economic Development, administers this program to small cities here in Nevada. Funds for this program are federal. They come from HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and they can be used on projects that help achieve one or more of the following goals: the development of suitable living environments to provide decent housing, and the creation of economic opportunities in rural parts of the state. And I'm going to focus in on that because over the years, specifically within about the last 3 years, GOED has shifted their priority in really pushing all of these grant funds to the creation of economic opportunities in rural Nevada. Whereas this program used to be a great source of funding for projects that really benefited community development, things like swimming pools, improvements to parks, walking trails, upgrades to water sewer systems, stuff that we received quite a bit of money from over the years. They've really taken a shift in really going towards economic development. So that's made, you know, a lot of these smaller counties have to put on a different thinking cap when you apply for these grants. The only community that qualifies, there is still a caveat in this program that you can qualify based on low to moderate income. Currently, the only community in Story County that qualifies based on that is the Lockwood community, and that's a direct result of an income survey that we did down there coming up on about 5 years ago now. So we can still kind of go to that criteria. However, like I say, the focus is really pushed toward that economic development. So you see these projects come in for different things, and if it doesn't have that nexus to economic development, it doesn't really fly. So we're eligible to submit for this grant program, which is there's approximately $2.4 million available. That's pretty, it's kind of been holding steady for the last about 7 years that I can recall. We're eligible to submit two applications. We have to go through a pre-application screening process with GOED, so it's kind of good for everyone involved. We don't spend a bunch of time on a full application just to say, this isn't eligible. So we have to submit a pre-application to them. Those are due, I believe, late October, early November. They'll come back and tell us, yeah, that's eligible activity. You can go ahead and submit a full application for that. So one idea that has been brought forward so far, working with our economic development team here in Story County, is the creation of maybe an economic plan for the Lockwood North County area. Lyon County did something similar a few years back, working with the University of Nevada. I think it's their economic program or business development or something. So that may be a project that we look at. Again, that's a plan. But that is related to economic development, just to kind of see trends, you know, what we're going to need in that area, residential, retail. It's a large, encompassing thing, and we really haven't drilled down into the exact details, but it's an idea and something that may very well be funded through this particular program. This particular program, of course, like with any other grant program, does have an advisory committee, so the folks that go in and rank these applications and make final decisions. It's made up of 9 members. All those folks now have some tie to economic development here in the state. It used to consist, I served on it for quite a few years before me, Holly Kieschler, I think Mary Lou Walling back in the day, Dean Haymore. I mean, we've had representatives on this board going back to the early 80s when this started. They've kind of switched that up now, so you see members of WNDD and NDD, all these different economic development areas. Just to kind of give you an idea of things that we funded in the past with CDBG, like I say, a lot of this stuff is kind of probably won't get funded again, hopefully. I mean, maybe they'll change their stance in years to come. I really hope they do, because some of these projects that we've done have just been fantastic. We were able to get an ambulance for the Lockwood community a couple years back at about $114,000. We were able to help our senior center here a couple years ago to get all new kitchen equipment that included a stove, refrigerator, some countertops, and about $25,000. We were able to put an ADA-compliant restroom at the swimming pool here in Virginia City. We were able to work with the Rural Senior Transportation Program to do some stipends for folks to transport seniors to doctor's appointment and stuff. And the rest of the money that we got, and this, like I said, goes back to the 80s, was really related to water and sewer systems. So we had a considerable amount of money to help us plan for where we're at right now with our sewer project, where we're at with our water projects. So we're going to be embarking on replacing some of that water line coming in from 5 Mile. It's been a direct result of planning that we did with these funds back in the day. We also assisted the Canyon General Improvement District in putting in a large, about over $200,000 project down there for them. So, like I say, put on your thinking cap for projects that are specifically focused to creating jobs and economic opportunity. And I'm asking for those ideas to be submitted to me by around October 1st so we can take a look at those, kind of vet them, and then be ready to submit if they do kind of qualify based on some initial qualifiers for a pre-application process. So got the pre-application, and then full application is due first part of January, somewhere around the 9th of January. And then it's one of those, you put the application in, and then they have usually their deliberations in March, and grant funds would not start until July of 2018. So it's kind of it's a long process, but that's where we're at with that. If anyone has any questions for me.
Should we just give our recommendation or thoughts directly to you?
Absolutely. Okay. Send me an email would be fantastic, and then I have that in writing. Yeah.
Is there any timeline or time frame to this to the income survey? I mean, it's been 5 years.
It's typically a 5-year period is what they kind of look at with that. I don't know that. I mean, we did one for Mark Twain that didn't come back in our favor.
Right.
We had a heck of a time getting people to respond to
that.
It's an eye-opening experience. I've done 3 income surveys. We did one here in Virginia City, and we missed it by just percentage points. However, that same survey we were able to use for USDA, and we got grant money out of them. They all have they're all part of the federal government, but each particular program has different thresholds on what.
Maybe we could tie it into the 2020 census or something like that.
That is going to be coming up. The American Community Survey would help us get some information.
We know that Mark Twain would qualify. We know that they would qualify if they would simply respond to the questionnaire, but people are afraid that that the information will stay confidential.
Right, and that's what I try to tell folks. I mean, I don't take this, I don't see it, I don't know, it's anonymous type thing. It goes to, folks at UNR were helping us compile this data. The information that we were asking is really no different than they ask you on the census or any loan, any type of thing you're doing really is.
Can we use the same information off the census?
It's very, CDBG is very specific in their income surveys. The different areas that you have to have, the questions that you have to ask. It's something to look at, down the road. We can kind of see.
Okay.
That would work.
Any other questions for sure?
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
All right. Next up is item 9. This is a discussion of possible action. Issue National Preparedness Month Proclamation. Mr. Curtis.
Good morning, Commissioners and Mr. Chairman. Joe Curtis for the record. As everyone in the room is well aware, in the last month or so, we've had some significant disaster occurrences within the nation. Of course, the one that immediately comes to mind is Hurricane Harvey, and it sounds like we're going to be backed up against another problem with Hurricane Irma that's coming forward here. Story County has had a history of its own kinds of disasters as well and emergencies, and in that process over the years, we have put together a mitigation plan, hazard mitigation plan. And within that plan, we identified 5 separate areas that we need to be concerned with in terms of potential natural or man-made disasters within Story County. Those consist of earthquake, number one, because we do sit on an earthquake fault, or several of them, that run through the area that is a major particular potential problem. Wildland fire and catastrophic community fire is another one. Winter storms, as you're well aware, the problems there that we've had. Wind storms that they can cause. It's interesting that the wind storms that we have very often will approximate what they get in these hurricanes. We just don't get the wind that comes, or the rain that comes with it. And the fifth one is that of floods. Both floods within rivers, the Truckee River in particular, and flash flooding that comes from thunderstorms that we need to deal with. And so we have to plan for these emergencies and these disasters that occur within our county. And with that in mind, we try to do a lot of preaching, if you will, about preparedness and taking care of ourselves, because Nevada is a very much a state that we tend to take care of ourselves and take care of our own things locally and help our fellow citizens very much so. With that in mind, September is traditionally, on a nationwide basis, the National Preparedness Month. So we prepared this proclamation for you, the county commissioners, to consider, and I'll read this proclamation quickly to you. National Preparedness Month, September 2017. Whereas National Preparedness Month creates an important opportunity for every resident of Story County to prepare their homes, businesses, and communities for any type of emergency, including natural disasters and potential terrorist attacks. And whereas investing the preparedness of ourselves, our families, and businesses, and communities can reduce fatalities and economic devastation in our communities and in our nation. And whereas the Federal Emergency Management Agency's READY campaign, Citizen Corps, and other federal, state, local, tribal, territorial, private, and volunteer agencies are working to increase public activities and preparing for emergencies and to educate individuals on how to take action. And whereas emergency preparedness is the responsibility of every citizen of Story County, and all citizens are urged to make preparedness a priority and work together as a team to ensure that individuals, families, and communities are prepared for disasters and emergencies of any type. And whereas all citizens of Story County are encouraged to participate in citizen preparedness activities and asked to review the READY campaign's website at ready.gov or listo.gov in Spanish and become more prepared. Therefore, be it resolved that the Story County Board of County Commissioners hereby proclaims September 2017 as National Preparedness Month and encourages all citizens and businesses to develop their own emergency preparedness plan and work together toward creating a more prepared society. Dated this fifth day of September 2017 by the Story County Board of County Commissioners. With those thoughts in mind, we even have a couple of things that have come up in the last couple of days that I'll tell you about. We found a couple more sinkholes that have occurred in our immediate area. And I was on the phone this morning with the State Bureau of Mines and Abandoned Mines Project. And they will be up here this afternoon to examine these and probably fence them for us. Those are potential disasters that create problems for us as well. So with those in mind, I would entertain or I'd like to request the commissioners to consider this proclamation.
Very good. Thank you, Joe.
Any questions?
This is the curtain. Current spots that you're talking that are sinking, are they coned off or out of public arm?
Not at this time. They're in somewhat of backcountry. They're not real accessible. One's by the cemetery, and another one is back into that area as well. So they're not easily accessible. So.
Okay. I want to ask if there's any public comment regarding this proclamation. Any board comments?
Okay. No, this is great.
We've done this in the past, have we not?
We have. We've been doing it every year for about probably the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. That's good. And we are a ready community. The sign says that
we are
in Virginia City.
We are recognized as what's called a storm ready community, and that requires certain things be in place for preparation by the National Weather Service to receive that accreditation as a storm ready community.
That's great. I know it's the effort from you and Sherry and others who've put us in the position where we are storm ready. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
I can get a motion to approve this.
Yeah. I move to proclaim September 2017 as National Preparedness Month in Story County.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Curtis.
Thank you, Commissioner.
All right. Coming upon item number 10,
Discussion of possible action. This was continued from the August 15th, 2017 board meeting. Consideration of letters of interest and of appointment of planning commissioner to fill the vacancy and serve the remainder of the term representing Precinct 5 of the Highlands on the Story County Planning Commission. I think we want to continue this to the next meeting. We're not done interviewing yet, so my apologies to anyone who may have attended the meeting today looking to see an appointment come out of this, but we just need to do some more interviewing. So
yes, Mr. Chairman, and we plan on putting this back on the September 19th board meeting. And I do want to thank Tom and Summer for attending today's meeting. They were aware of this, but decided they wanted to watch the commission meeting and learn about county issues anyway.
All right. Is there any public comment regarding this? Hearing none? Okay. Tom, you want to come up?
Tom Taramina, 20-year Story County resident, proud of it. I recently had an opportunity to visit with Austin in regard to the Planning Commission opening, and one of the questions that he asked me was very direct and very, very pointed, and that was, what do you think of the new master plan? And I looked at him, and I've known Austin for a long time, and I knew when he started the work on it, I said, it's the best that we could have done. And I did not mean that in any sort of a derogatory way. For a little bit of background, when we moved here in 1997, I was the only consultant to the Dell Computer Fulfillment Center at what is now TRI. And what I discovered in doing my training and consulting work out there was that the people that they hired locally to run the distribution center and the Dell employees were not getting along at all. And so I did an extensive analysis, and I went back to Round Rock and reported to headquarters that the Story County folks and the regional folks that work there, the cultural differences were so huge that the Dell people are results-based compensation. They're personally accountable for everything they do. And there was quite a dichotomy. That sent me off on a 20-year quest. I served on the board of NNDA for 3 years trying to make some change and awareness of what's coming to this county. When I met Lance years ago, I couldn't have been more proud of what he and Roger had started. And today I'm just brimming with pride in what they've accomplished. Several years ago, my little two-man company started something called the Center for Business Excellence. It was a not-for-profit. Our entire mission was to compare the needs of the businesses and the resources available. Spent a year of my life and $100,000 of our company money. We interviewed all of the colleges, and believe it or not, there's 42 outreach agencies in the region besides the colleges, and tried to figure out what services were available. We interviewed as many companies as would host us to find out what their needs are. During this time, we were fortunate to have contact with one of Elon Musk's senior staff, and I think I made Lance and Chris aware of that. And what he challenged us to 3 years ago was, if you can bring together all of the agencies and all of the colleges and all of the outreach agencies and all of the training people into one group, not-for-profit group, as a board of advisors, Tesla would back that. A year ago December, I had to call him on the phone and say, I'm sorry, we've let you down, because there's no appetite for that sort of thing in the community. I can say that categorically because we hired two consultants that were part of the startup of Silicon Valley. I've always believed TRI is going to be Silicon Valley East or Research Triangle West, however you want to make the metaphor. These two consultants, one of them was in the business part of the startup of Silicon Valley, the other one was in the human resources part. They both resigned after a month. They said, we cannot help you. The strategic thinking in the entire state is such that we do not understand the difference between the people that work in Silicon Valley and in other high-tech areas and the people who are available in the workforce. You will not convince the regional leaders and the government that there's a difference, and you will not find the resources that you need within this region to staff these positions. It was a difficult phone call to make. My wife once again admonished me for trying to put on the robes and be a crusader. I'm not a crusader. I'm a strategic thinker. I spent 33 years in Houston watching it go from a cow town to the fifth largest city in the world. I was part of the oil field crash. I was part of something that I've mentioned to a number of people before. Houston developed an annexation law just in the middle of the night somewhere that said they could annex whatever they wanted. I worked at Mission Control in Houston at the time, and they annexed Clear Lake City, which is a little community around there. We rode around with bumper stickers that said, Occupied Clear Lake City. And it was the same issue that the strategic thinking to look ahead and say, what is this going to look like in 10, 15, or 20 years? What's it going to take to make this area not just a business leader, but the Center for Business Excellence proposed the housing issues. We proposed dealing with the education, not college education, but a learning center where we have a demand pull system for asking companies, what do you need? And we will go out and find the best-in-class resources. And the only reason we did that is because none of these 42 agencies, including EDON, has the ability or the right under their charter to vet resources and make referrals. That's the only thing we were going to do differently was like Angie's List. We were going to vet resources and then recommend them to people who needed them. So as this process goes forward, once again, I will say, Austin, you've done a magnificent job, you and all the people that worked with you on the master plan. However, our consultants, and from my experience in Houston, the people who are going to be working in the high-tech part of the industrial park and the rest of the region are going to want to live where they work. They're going to want to ride their bikes to work. They're going to want to go kayaking on the river. They're going to want all of their eclectic shops, restaurants, casinos within walking distance, which in the case of TRI, 107,000 acres is a long walk. But the point is the average high-tech worker, and again, we paid for this study, the average high-tech worker is going to want to live where they work. And I have a feeling that Google is going to bring that to the community. Finally, having worked with Dell for a couple of years, I watched the exact same thing happen with Round Rock, Texas. When I first started with Dell...
Tom, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay. When I first started working for Dell, Travis County in Austin said, we're not going to help you grow. They moved across the county line, and now Round Rock, Texas is the model for what I foresee being here. I thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you. All right. I'll ask if there's any more public comment regarding this item. If not, if I can get a motion to go ahead and continue this to the September 19th.
Yeah. I'll make a motion to continue this item to September 19th at this courthouse at 10 o'clock.
I'll second your motion.
Been moved to second to continue item 10 to the next regular meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Moving along now to item number 11. This is discussion and possible action. Consideration and possible action to approve resolution number 17-467, restricting the discharge of firearms in wildland areas when the fire chief determines that the danger of wildland fire is high. Mr. Loomis.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. I was not here at the last meeting where this issue had come up. But two meetings ago, there had been a request for clarification as to what constituted a wildland area, and there was a question regarding the possibility of other shooting ranges within the area that of Story County. And so this has been brought back. We now have the provision. We use the definition that's put forward by the National Wildfire Discussion Group, I believe is their name, and that is set out in the second paragraph of the resolution, which says that wildland means an area in which development is essentially non-existent except for roads, railroads, power lines, and similar transportation facilities. Structures of any are widely scattered. So we provided a definition for wildland areas, and in paragraph 7, we have provided that target shooting is not prohibited at any location which has been reviewed by the fire chief or his representative and found to be suitable for target shooting. A list of such approved locations shall be kept in the office of the fire chief. So those are basically the two amendments that have been made to the proposed resolution, and we have brought it back for further consideration by the board.
No, you addressed my concerns.
Okay, good. I like it. I've had a resident call me, and they were concerned about would this prohibit them from using a firearm for self-protection or predators, and I assured that person, no, this is just basically for target shooting.
Yes.
As a whole, because as we've seen how the countryside has been burning up around us, I think it's a common sense resolution. Plus, I think it's pretty much like if the fire chief or his staff see anybody, you know, out shooting, and it's a high danger area, they can ask them to stop shooting. You know, so not in fear of being arrested or going to jail, but it's, you know, it's if we didn't have anything in writing, you say, well, there's no rules to say I can't.
That's right. My general opinion on this is there's a large body of law that gives strict liability to private property owners who cause fires through negligence. And that body of law has been in force and effect for years. And I'm personally not in favor of a new regulation that impacts private property rights. So to the extent that the wildland areas are public property or BLM property or properties owned by communities, I understand that, but I believe that private property should be excluded from this new resolution. And that's my personal opinion.
How do you see that?
Well, this is a proposal that's being presented to this body. You're the legislative branch of the local government, and it's a proposal. If it needs amendment or if it's just seen as not a good idea, we can either reject it or we can provide further amendments to the resolution. I think most of the land in Story County is in private property. And so if we take private property out of it, it really won't apply very widely.
Well, I'm not in favor of regulation of additional private property rights. And I understand the desire to stop all things of danger, and certainly unrestricted shooting could be of a danger, but I'm not in favor of further regulatory oversight of private property.
This isn't an ordinance. This is just a recommendation.
It's a resolution. Yeah.
It's a resolution.
It's a resolution.
It doesn't have the force of an ordinance.
It doesn't have any authority to speak of.
Not really. It's more of a
it doesn't have any authority for prosecution, but it does give the fire chief authority to ask people to stop shooting if you receive that voice.
It's like the Smokey the Bear statue sitting outside the Highlands there. They got a danger arrow there. Okay, if the danger arrow is in the high, then you don't start any fires out there. It's more on that.
I think it was suggested, I think that our fire chief, and I have great respect for Jeff, that perhaps 10% of the fires in Nevada may have been caused by shooting. And I'm aware of one fire that was, and I'm aware that there is strict liability for the cause. And that group has been identified as having to pay for any damages along those ways. And that's a strong deterrent. But if 10% of the fires may, I've watched multiple fires started all over the county by lightning. I've watched them. I've ridden Harleys with the lightning striking and three or four fires around us. So by far the preponderance of danger comes out of all of the weather systems that we have come across. And again, I am not in favor of further restricting firearm use, especially as it comes to private property.
Along those lines, like if we go down to where 6 Mile runs into 7 Mile, we had a fire, the most recent fires in that same proximity, we had a fire there probably about 10 years ago. It was caused by target shooting, but it wasn't caused by the property owner. It's by just anybody who wanted to stop, get out of their vehicle, and fire off some rounds. So I can see where you have the rub with property rights, but I think most of these fires started by target shooting, aren't by the property owners or by someone else who's just taking advantage of target shooting at will.
I think that's probable, and that's why most private property owners post their land, no trespassing, no shooting, no hunting.
Yeah.
And so you can take steps that further oversee your liability in the issue. But again, I think having a fire chief putting out some kind of a proclamation that today is a non-firing day, how in the world are you going to distribute that? How are you going to police that? How are you going to possibly, so we're creating more layers, in my opinion, of regulatory environment that are really unenforceable. They're going to be on the books. They don't have a sunset clause, and they're impacting private property rights. Again, I'm not comfortable in doing that.
I think we kind of do the same thing, though, with open burning. When it's a red flag, you can't have any open burning. So I see one is the same as the other because it's still property rights. You still might own the land, but you shouldn't be doing any open burning if it's a red flag day because you have high temps and high winds, and a fire is going to go ahead and get out of control in rapid order. So I see the comparison there is being pretty equal.
I understand your point.
How about we take public comment on this and see what everybody else seems to think about it, Mr. Ayers?
Good morning, Steve Ayer, longtime resident. On that topic, specifically what you were talking about, the fire starting in 7 and 6 Mile. That 10 years ago, that's always been a known local place for people to go target shooting. And those of us that shoot and hunt, we know better in this type of season because it's dangerous. I spent my time doing volunteer firefighting up here, and we have seen that happen. And the other day, right after the fire when they opened up 6 Mile, as I was driving up, I heard a bunch of gunshots. I stopped to see where the fire line was, and I started hearing a bunch of gunshots, and it wasn't further up on the private property. It was right in that turn. So I immediately drove uptown, called the SO, said, hey, we have somebody shooting, because I thought, like Washoe County, that we had that, where you're not allowed to be out target shooting in this type of a fire condition. And when I talked to Gary Haynes about it, he says, I don't think we have that kind of control. And it really hit home then that you really do need to have some kind of protections, because the property that the fire started on 10 years ago is a property Gordon Church Ward used to own. Then it's sold. Somebody else has it. They live out of the area. But it's always been a known place to go up target shooting. So a lot of locals do it. But then again, we have so many new people moving in from out of the area. And now with the quads and the side-by-sides and all that, we have a lot of people coming up that are new to Lyon County that come up, oh, great, here's a super spot to go shooting, and it just presents a lot of danger for us. We were just super lucky on this fire, and I really want to thank Jeff and Evan. He did an awesome job of stopping that, because that could have been a heck of a lot worse than it was. But in that area on 6 and 7 miles, some of that is private, some of it isn't. There's a lot of BLM in there. You don't know what the distinguishing lines are. So I think it's something that you really need to look at, because that fire we got lucky on again this time, we might not be so lucky the next time. So please consider that.
Thanks, Steve. Okay. Who else? Jay, coming up.
Jay Carmona, Virginia City Highlands, for the record. I just wanted to say that I think it's a great idea. There are restrictions on other activities in the high fire season. And I just want to let you know, I think you guys should go ahead and move on this.
Thank you. Who's next? No one else? Do you have any follow-up on this, Jack?
No. No. Like I said, he addressed my concerns, and private property was one of them as well.
Yeah.
But then it is addressed as, this is not a law. This is just a resolution, and it's just a warning. Help people, you know, warn people that you shouldn't be out there shooting in this kind of weather.
Mm-hmm. No.
We've got cheap grass that's up to our butts, and it's dead. I mean, it'll go up like tissue paper if it gets ignited.
Okay. Well, I'm inclined to agree with you, because it's not an ordinance. It's only a resolution, and we go ahead and approve a lot of resolutions that are just, I think, good for the community. So what we're going to do is I'm going to call for a motion and see where we go from there.
Well, I'm going to certainly defer to my two fellow commissioners, and I have great respect for both of you. So if I may, I will abstain from the vote on this, and you all carry the ball.
Well, yeah. You can abstain or you can vote no.
Yeah, you can vote no. That's fine.
No, he can vote no. I guess he can abstain because he doesn't agree.
Okay. I move to approve Resolution 17-467, restricting target shooting in the wildland areas when the fire chief determines that the danger of the wildland fires is high, and authorize the chairman to sign.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 17-467. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Opposed?
He can't abstain. There's no conflict.
He opposed.
Okay.
He opposed.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. We'll move on now to item number 12, discussion of possible action. So, Pat, you were waiting. We're just getting to item 10 now with the BNT. Did you want to come up?
Cool.
This was review and possible approval of a transfer of funds to assist the Nevada Commission for the reconstruction of the BNT Railway to repair damage caused by the BNT Railway during the 2017 flood, in an amount not to exceed $326,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Pat Wittens, County Manager for Story County, and I apologize for my casual dress. So I just got back in from the playa, but actually Denver this morning. It was beautiful. The next two items are concurrent in my mind, and I'm going to be hopefully following the lead also of Commissioner McGuffney and our Comptroller Hugh Gallagher on some points and facts. As far as reimbursing for FEMA damage, I have been to most of the meetings, as I know Jack has been to them all. Comptroller Gallagher has been to them all. I believe some of the in the audience, particularly Ms. Bard, has been to them. And I'm going to tell you that the Commission for the Reconstruction of the BNT Railway is in a transition right now. We have less than 60 days for this existing board to really make binding decisions, and then a new board comes in. We don't know who some of the players are going to be. Carson City hasn't named their designee. I think I had intended to put on, you know, an agenda item next month to name ours for the newly constituted board that takes place November 1st. Long story short on both these items, but particularly addressing this one first on the FEMA FEMA advance, we've only got two more months. There's a long way to go. I'm also concerned in that this seems to be pressed, and this is going to sound odd coming from me, but this seems to be pressed more at a staff level than a commission level in some respects, in that there is a contract paid employee that thinks we have to have all these FEMA damages repaired and repaired now. Now, these were the same stories that Jack and Hugh and Nicole and I and others were hearing back in January, February, well, probably February and March to be more realistic. And we now have almost an entire season under our belt where that train has run every scheduled day up here. So I think for us to consider loaning monies right now in advance is premature. We can wait. There are a number of steps I think that would be prudent that I would recommend to the V&T Rail Commission and also to this commission. One would be to get the operator out there and look at every bit of damage that the contract engineer has identified and said, is this critical? Is it not? That might pare down the $300,000 to $125,000 or so. So my recommendation is, depending on Commissioner McCuffey, I think he was asked to put this on there and then given the hot potato by the Rail Commission chairman. But my suggestion would be to either decline the loan right now or just continue this to an indefinite time while we continue to research and also convene a new board. Thank you.
There seem to be some uncertainty or unknowns on Dwight Millard's behalf. He didn't know, you know, this $326,000, it was also brought up that maybe Carson will cover half of that. So, but, and then there's, he's throwing out to throw in the Draco building as collateral, or maybe that the lot down at the Gold Hill Depot that they own. So, and I talked to, well, an email conversation with Dwight this morning, because I invited him up to speak, and he declined, and he made the statement that, you know, there's no formal request on the table. So I guess this is basically a chance for us to talk about it and see what possibilities there are. So we don't have to make any kind of decision anyway. So I would, after public comment, I would move to just continue this until we have more information.
So we do. We'll open it up right now for public comment. Come on up, Ms. Park.
Nicole Bard for the record. I agree with Pat. This commission has been struggling for quite a long time, and I think that besides the physical problems with the infrastructure, that other issues regarding to the actual business and the lines themselves need to be looked at in addition to this. So, you know, Pat, I think you're right. I think that we need to look at all of the things that need to be done and determine what is necessary and critical to be done, and the rest of it can, you know, wait until later. So I support that.
Thank you.
I think we all agree on that.
Any other public comment? Yeah, I agree with Pat. I think we should table this until we get to, or continue it until we get a new board seated. And we have a chance to meet with the operator and have him give us what his bird's eye view is on the situation.
Because right now we have the engineer that's getting all these contractors in line and trying to kind of keep them at bay and waiting for us to throw some money at him. So I just do wait.
Okay. So I get a motion to continue this. Or table it, or how do you do it?
Yeah, I think there's an issue when it's indefinite. It generally is better if there's going to be a date certain that you're going to take it to, or just take it off and bring it back when it becomes relevant.
Okay.
Either way.
We can schedule it after.
When the new board takes effect October 1st, but we don't have a meeting set at this time. Or the V&T Rail Commission doesn't have a meeting date set.
Then it probably would be, since it is indefinite, to take it off and just bring it back when you want to bring it back.
instead of continue it indefinitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You get a motion to go ahead and just
pull it off. I'll make a motion to take this off the agenda.
I'll second.
We're moving to second to pull this from the agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Moving on now to number 13, discussion of possible action, review and possible approval of transferring $137,000 to the BNT Rail Commission to help defray cost of operating the BNT incurred from January 1st, 2017 through June 31st, 2017. Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Pat Whitten, Story County Manager, and I apologize for one more thing, too, and appreciate your indulgence this morning. I apologize for the casualness, not only of my clothing, but also referring to my phone, which has notes that Commissioner McGuffey and I discussed somewhere between Denver and Reno. I have some concerns with this one, too. I'm not saying – I want to be very clear. We don't want to kill the project. But at the same time, we want to be prudent with taxpayer dollars, regardless of whether they're sales tax dollars or any other tax dollars. And the Rail Commission, I need to distinguish between the Rail Commission and the County Commission. And actually, when it comes to the Rail Commission, I want to distinguish again, as we have done in the past in the legislature, Commissioner McGuffey and I in particular, not so much the Rail Commission as much as staff sometimes. There have been no notifications until recently, to the best of my knowledge. I'm looking for Mr. Gallagher to agree with that. But now we're going retroactive. So all of a sudden we've got all these operating losses. And, you know, I won't argue or contest that our interlocal agreement or memorandum of understanding between us and the Rail Commission, between Story County and the Rail Commission, does say if they notify us in any 1 month of an operational shortfall, then we can go ahead and provide some of those tax funding dollars. I would suggest, again, this is something for the new board to want to take a look at, because if you trend, and again, I'm not sure we have accurate enough information from Rail Commission staff, but if you trend these, and Commissioner McGuffey, Comptroller Gallagher, and I see every day exactly what the gross receipts are for the train, train only, okay, paid ticketed passengers. We see what the operator costs are for the train itself through Tom Gray and the B&T. I will tell you, one, the good news is they're doing a whole lot better this year than they have in the last year and a half, I think, or 2 years that we've been tracking it, that they've been giving us information to track. But if you trend what we don't see, we believe it's probably they survive or maybe bleed red a little bit during the season. And then all of a sudden, Polar Express comes along, or the money from Polar Express, they're selling tickets right now, and you get that spike. And what I want to hammer out before we release any funds, would be my recommendation, is first off, we need to see a year's trend. You know, we need to make sure that we're not covering every month in the loss, and not getting, you know, some type of credit reference back for what Polar Express is doing. So again, my suggestion, subject to Commissioner McGuffey, and also, of course, I defer to our comptroller, would be to go ahead and take no action on this, and we'll revisit it after the new board's convened.
Right. I've read the interlocal agreement a couple times, trying to, but it seems like it is kind of vague. And it does appear that, okay, they should be writing a letter to us requesting money for the shortfall for the month. Okay, so they just sit on it, I guess, and then all of a sudden here they want us to write a $137,000 check. I think also, and I'm not, you know, there's discrepancies in that number. There's a lot of discrepancies. There's money that goes to a historic fund that shouldn't be on there. That's not an operating expense. So what I'd like to see, not only this hold off until we have the new board, but I'd also like to, I think we need to start looking at rewriting that agreement. That interlocal agreement is just, it's not in favor of Story County by no means. So I think that's where we're going to be going.
Well, do we know what their balance sheet even looks like? I mean, do they have money in the bank?
No, they never have money in the
bank. Because, I mean, if they have ongoing, if they have operational shortfall every month, it is, you know, the agreement that we would go ahead and make up the monthly shortfalls.
Right.
But if we go ahead and approve transferring $137,000, when they make it all up on Polar Express, are they going to give us $137,000 back?
Yeah, right. And that's not
that's my point, sir.
Yeah, and it's, that's not stated in our interlocal agreement.
So, are they running in arrears all along and Polar Express makes them well, or does Polar Express give them a nice cushion to start off their season? So we don't know.
It seems like, I don't know, it seems like they start off their season broke.
Yeah.
So I don't know where the money's going.
Yeah. All right. How about if we take public comment? Ms. Bard.
Nicole Bard for the record. Hugh, you were there with me. I think it's a cash flow problem, and it's a short-term cash flow problem right now for them. So to the extent that the interlocal does say that if they have a shortfall in any month that we, you know, help them with that, the interlocal doesn't say, oh, and if you make it up later, you pay it back. So two things. One, if this is a short-term cash flow problem, and they are running on empty, because they showed us their numbers at the last meeting, maybe what we consider is having it be a loan, not a payment per the interlocal agreement, to help smooth over the 3 months and stipulate that when further funds come in that it gets reimbursed. That'll happen with the new board. This board may not be the ones that do that, but the new board will pay it back. So I'm just lobbying for them that says if this is a cash flow scenario for them, and we've all been there with our businesses, you need something to tide you over for a couple of months. Maybe we give them a loan, we put that on them to pay it back, but in fact, the new board pays it back when the Polar monies come in.
Thank you. Would you have your next board meeting?
They haven't called it. They kind of leave that open for a while until they decide we need a meeting.
Okay, because I'm sure they're currently selling Polar Express tickets. So
yeah, in fact, that was something we just started this year.
You would think that they would have adequate cash flow coming in if they're pre-selling, because we know Polar Express sells out every year.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a good consideration brought on by Ms. Bard you're going to recommend that we pull this off the agenda, right?
Right.
And then maybe at your next board meeting you can get some better details on where they stand financially, and perhaps a loan is in the works, or if need be, we have to go ahead and just transfer the money with no loan if they're unable to pay back.
Yeah.
Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chairman, Hugh Gallagher for the record. This is kind of a culmination of something that Pat and Larry and I started about 3 or 4 years ago with these guys. They just don't get it. They in that interlocal agreement, it was every single month, and they just did not want to do that every single month.
Yeah.
We gave them $226,000 plus for the engine repair of, I think it's number 18.
Yes.
They are using that for operating money now. And so we still haven't got any bills in from Tom Gray yet, but they're still using it, and effectively how they use that is they have an operating fund and a commission fund. So there's a lot of back and forth going on. My recommendation when the new board gets here is that there's only going to be one fund and none of this transfer in, transfer out stuff. I believe that the new board will take a look at this stuff, and it needs to be, there's a lot of things that they're going to have to need to do, quite frankly, in a short period of time. What is all of their contracts has to be done by the last week in December, because their new contracts are due January 1st. But I think this is the end of some things that have been a burn to myself for quite a while. The fact that they expect us to do these things post haste, I think, is a little bit on the inconsiderate side, and the fact that they haven't been here and that they don't want to speak at this probably speaks volumes to it. So I'm in complete agreement with Pat. This is probably not a good thing, and that if we wait till the new board to get here, we'll be much better off.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay, Commissioner McGuffey.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to take this item off the agenda for future agendas.
Yeah, we'll bring it back on when it's appropriate.
Yes.
Okay.
Second.
Been moved and second to pull this item from the agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving on now to item number 14. Thanks, Pat. Discussion of possible action, review, and possible approval of agreed upon procedures presented by Grant Thornton, LLP, Certified Public Accounting Firm, pertaining to audit engagement with Tesla.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a result of a comment and a meeting that I had with Keith Loomis that said, I cannot sign for anything, which I completely agree with. Until somebody gives me the authority to do that. This is these standard CPA agreements, I mean, they want everybody to assume whatever it is that happens, regardless of whether it's your fault or not. And so consequently, Keith has been going to those people. I don't know if he's at a point where he could say, I could sign this, or maybe you could sign this. And so I'll leave this up. I'll leave the legal issue up to Keith at this time.
So this is an agreement whereby under SB1 of the 2014 session, which was basically an incentive package for large projects, which at that time was Tesla. Tesla is entitled to apply to the state for reimbursement of sales tax that it pays. That sales tax claim has to be reviewed by an accountant, and the accountant then provides the information to Tesla and to the county. We get the money from the state, and if the claim is reviewed as being valid, then the county pays it to Tesla. So this is the process where this contract comes into play. I question whether it's really a necessary contract, but Grant Thornton apparently thinks it does. The reason that I believe it needs to go to the board is because it requires that the county accept certain responsibilities and limits Grant Thornton's liability in certain areas. So we are agreeing to limit their liability, as well as we are agreeing to state that their procedures that they're going to use to evaluate the claim are valid. And so that's two basic areas of liability the county is taking on, and that's why I believe it needs to come to the board. It was just an acknowledgement of receipt of this, what they're going to do. I think you can sign it because it doesn't obligate the county to do anything. But this does obligate the county to do something, and that's why I have brought it, asked Hugh to bring it to the board, and I think you can authorize Hugh to sign, or you could ask authorize the county manager to sign, or authorize the chairman to sign, but I do think it needs to be reviewed by the board.
Well, when it says here to hold harmless, is there any liability whatsoever on Grant Thornton's behalf?
Very minimal. We did take out an indemnity provision where we agreed to indemnify them. They agreed to take that out, but they were not agreeable to removing anything else.
Do you have any questions on this, Jack?
Yeah, so what is their concern? What is the primary concern here?
Well, I would call it...
Can you make it...
I would call it risk management.
Yeah.
I think that's a primary
concern.
No risk management on their part, basically.
Well, they've eliminated risk.
Are we assuming some risk?
Well, we've agreed that if there are damages, that the extent that they are entitled... that they're responsible for the damages, it's only to the amount of whatever compensation they received. So they've limited it, but they do have some responsibility for damages. We have a provision in here that says that, and that's on the last paragraph of page 2. There's also a provision in here that says that any claim by Story County must be brought within 2 years from the date the services are provided. And so, I mean, there's some risk management things going on in here. We went back with a couple of risk management things on behalf of the county, which resulted in the elimination of the indemnification provision. But, you know, realistically, there's probably not much risk in the contract overall.
I mean, is it customary?
Is it customary? I'd say that everyone tries to eliminate their risk, yes.
Mr. Chairman, the way this works is that Grant Thornton gets a gets all of the sales tax returns from Tesla for all of the people that they have provided. They get those sales tax returns and confirmation. Then what they do is a representative sample. They take the tax returns and make sure that they paid their taxes, the 2% sales tax, to the Department of Taxation, and that it was coming into Story County on the long form. The state of Nevada, when they get their 2% worth, they send that portion to us. We have a dedicated fund for that, and that or for other than the 2%. And then that the rest of that, then when an audit report comes back from Grant Thornton saying that they've looked at this and for all of the for this block of tax returns, this is what they think we should pay them. And so consequently, what I do is I go through their report, make sure that all the additions and everything are correct, make sure that all the footings are correct, and then I issue a check to Tesla on that behalf. You know, always making sure that I've got enough money in that in and out account that I can pay that. If there's not any money in that account and I get an audit for that request, I'm not going to pay it. So, yeah, that's one of those. I don't think there will ever be a time that will happen. However, if Grant Thornton did foul up and give me an audit that, number one, I'm not reviewing any of their work. I'm just reviewing the report for accurateness, for accountability purposes. You know, and that money goes to Tesla. It certainly would be found in a subsequent report because we're not going to pay out anything more than we receive on this in and out account. Nothing more.
So Washoe County's making sure that they're not making the test.
About a million higher, they're going to want the same identity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. Standard.
Standard. Okay. Will we take public comment on this item? Mr. Whitten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Pat Whitten, County Manager, for just taking advantage of the public comment part of this. I think Hugh has done an excellent job in framing the mechanics of this. I look around this room, and Bob's not here today, Morris, but, you know, there really is almost no one that was there today in this room to craft every agreement, which there are, as I recall, either 8 or 10 working agreements with Tesla that had to be forged for this entire process. This is just one component, one element. We agreed early on that the state wanted an independent auditor, the county wanted an independent auditor, and Tesla wanted an independent auditor to make sure those funds were flowing and to the extent we can to avoid the Washoe County debacle, as you've referenced, and also to make sure that, as Hugh has said very aptly, is for every dollar taken in, we're not going to pay more than a dollar, and in most cases, there's always money on the books left over, at least right now. So it is an in-and-out account, and it is, as I think I heard Mr. Commissioner Gilman say, pretty much a standard clause, you know, in my opinion. If you look at any interlocal agreement, any mortgage, deed, or trust, anything, you're going to see stuff in there. And as the county's risk manager, I would say this is minimal. We've been operating with these agreements until it was discovered that we should bring this before the commission. We've been operating with these agreements probably since late 2014, early 2015, to the best of my memory, without any problems so far. So I would certainly recommend that you either authorize the comptroller to sign these or approve it, either way.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wynn. More public comment? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Thank you for your explanation. It helped a lot. Thank you.
So, Mr. Loomis, is it your recommendation that we authorize the comptroller to go ahead and sign this agreement?
It is.
Okay. Good. I go ahead and get a motion?
Okay. But the motion doesn't state that.
You can add it to it if you want. I was looking at the last page and it had Gallagher's name on it. The comptroller to sign.
I hereby approve the agreed upon procedures presented Grant Thornton LLP with regards to sales tax audit of Tesla for reimbursement by Story County to Tesla and authorize the comptroller to sign.
I'll second your motion.
Move to second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Moving on now to item number 15, discussion of possible action. Review and possible approval pertaining to a contract with Tyler Technologies to replace the existing back office accounting software not to exceed $450,000. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this has been a work in progress. I think Keith Lewis got his final draft of their procedurals and their contract. He got that Friday. We've been making changes all week, so consequently they're not here right now. But it's essentially what it's gone to is it's gone from $450,000 to about $150,000 because we've had some software that we thought was duplicated with the DevNet contract. My recommendation is if you want to do a not to exceed $200,000 upon approval of Keith's overview and Pat's overview and my overview. And that if Pat can sign that document at that time, that would get us out of that. Otherwise, we could redo this on the 19th if that's your wish.
That's a considerable change. 450 to 200?
Yeah.
So this is going to be what we're replacing, the AS400?
That's the AS400.
This is only the software, though, right? This is
software.
The hardware.
There's going to be another request for hardware costs, which we can use the same hardware for both software companies, DevNet and Tyler, so we don't have to duplicate any of that hardware, but that hardware cost is going to be around $100,000.
Okay.
And James Dean's getting all of those components together as we speak.
Any idea how that compares to what the AS400 system would have cost if we were to reinvent the wheel with that?
Yeah,
it was similar to it.
It would be much higher, I think, if we went down the ADS road. I mean, obviously there's no code books, there's no instruction books. It's all in their head. It's a very, very old system, very, very old technology. I think we would be, I think moving in this direction, I think, because, you know, there's, I think it's a young person's software, and and the old goats are going to have to just go by the wayside on this one, but it's good technology. It's fast. It's efficient. It's accountable. Because we have these two as our third-party vendors on here, there will be hopefully no security issues, and we'll see what happens when that happens.
Is this going to include a service contract as well? Or is
absolutely.
That
yes.
And for how many years?
It's a year-to-year contract on maintenance.
Yeah.
The software licensing, I think, is a one-time shot. And then it's the annual maintenance fees that come across.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
A lot of money.
Yeah, but yeah. We saved $250,000 with a stroke of the pen. How about we have any public comment regarding this new software? Replace the AS400?
I have a quick question. Does that include the clerk and recorder site as well?
Okay, since you're at the podium, you're going to go ahead and identify yourself for the record. Right?
For the record, name Jen Chapman.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you. I just needed to make sure that that included the other sites of...
The Eagle portion?
The what?
The Eagle portion?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Okay. And I just do have to also, for the record, Chen Chen, I do also have to add that this company, they really are giving us a great deal. About a year and a half ago, I asked them for a quote for the recorder side. They have brought that down considerably by just even for the clerk recorder side, which includes both the clerk and recorder, and they reduced it by almost $40,000. So they're really working with us. And right now, they're probably the only company that's on the market that can provide a solution like this for at least several offices. So, and it's something that will be sustainable well into the future. Washoe County has had this system for decades. So, and it's nationwide. There's great support, and it's got a longevity that you won't find. When I was starting to look at the stuff on the recorder side, just the imaging side, we paid the same amount for back in the early 2000s. So with something that takes both imaging and day-to-day functions of the offices and is essentially charging the same amount, it's a great thing. So, thank you.
Thank you.
One of the things we did stress, Mr. Chairman, is we want to make sure that the assessor, the clerk treasurer, and the recorder get an appropriate and a satisfying application that they approve with, because there is a tremendous amount of function that goes on in all three of those departments. DevNet did not have the proper solution for Jen Chapman and Vanessa that we thought was there, and so consequently we went out and got another set from this company.
Hugh, is there a learning curve associated with the transfer into this system, or is it something that our staff is going to be familiar with?
Staff is going to the assessor's group is since that's the hardest application right now, because there's so much involved in property tax evaluations and assessments and stuff. They're already started on it. As soon as this contract is, as soon as we approve this contract, then there will be several meetings with the recorders, clerk treasurers, all the accounting personnel, all of the people involved in the entire accounting process. There will be those sessions, and then, you know, we're hoping, I was thinking July of 2018, it may be July of 2019, but we'll be well prepared by then to do that. And then what we're going to look at is the transformation of information from ADS for prior years. And sometimes that doesn't come over as well because it's a different format. Data streams are all, you know, between a 50-year-old technology and a 5-year-old technology, sometimes get a little difficult, but that may be the only problem we're going to have. Operationally, I think we're going to be fine.
So we're looking at a software, $200,000, hardware, another $100,000. So we're looking at about $300,000 there. Because I think when we were first talking about the demise of the S400, I think we were talking upwards of $1 million, weren't we? When we first started talking about it, we thought it was going to cost us maybe about $1 million to replace the system. So we get this for $300,000.
No, this is quite a deal.
It's almost a steal, except it's still $300,000.
Yeah. Some people have paid that.
Yeah. Any other public comment? Hey, Jack.
So.
Right.
So,
not to exceed 200.
Or just wait till we get the right numbers from Dean, because he said Dean's looking at a couple other things.
Well, we go not to exceed. It's probably going to be less than that anyway. Okay. Otherwise, you have to come back and approve it again.
Yeah.
A point of Mr. Witten's right. DevNet did cost us. The total cost of this and DevNet is way below $1 million. So, but DevNet was that person. Tyler was going to take the entire thing, which was going to be about $1 million, and now we've got it down to where it's they're each probably about, you know, $250,000 apiece.
Okay. So, do you need this recommendation to be $250,000 or
$200,000? No. I think not to exceed $300,000 is fine. Then based upon then we will at the 19th meeting in September. Will that
include the hardware too?
That'll include the hardware.
Okay.
Then we will have Keith Lewis sign off on the legal. I will sign off on the operational side, and Pat will review it and sign it on both of our behalves, and we should be good to go.
So just to be clear, so are you bringing this back before the board on the 19th, or are you asking for it not to exceed $300,000 now, and you're going to do all of the stuff with Pat, signing the contract before the September 19th meeting?
Yeah, signing contract before the 19th.
Okay.
That gets us in the queue.
And for clarification, it's not 450, it's 300.
300, yes.
It'll be 300.
Not to exceed 300.
Motion.
I hereby move to approve a contract with Tyler Technologies in the amount not to exceed $300,000 for the purpose of replacing existing software and hardware, which will be no longer available December 31st, 2019.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
Moved and second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 16, this is discussion of possible action, review and possible action pertaining to the development of capital improvement plan for Story County. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a result of a meeting that we had with the debt management board. There's a couple of, these last two items are a part of it. It is just time. Every year we get an inquiry from our debt management analyst as to what our five-year plan is. We pretty much have said all along that we don't have one. And we've been pretty lucky with that. We have a capital projects special revenue fund that we use in certain situations. But I think with aging infrastructure and just the expansion of not only Industrial Park, but Story County in general, I think we need to put some numbers to paper and see where we think we need to be at certain periods of time. And I say a five-year to 10-year, I think 5 years is the minimum. But at least it gives us an opportunity to sit down and say, okay, look, what do we think is going to happen here in Story County? And number two, how are we going to fund that? We've been very, very lucky in the past by being able not to go to medium-term financing through anybody. We've pretty much paid as we go. But I think, you know, you never know about this stuff. So if we have a development where we can fund a capital projects fund or a capital improvement fund, I think it's in our best interest. And then we pretty much treat that like the infrastructure fund where there's approvals on your side as to what we're going to expend money for, and then we will go after, we will have amounts to that, and then we'll take on the administrative part of that. It will happen similar to the 474 Fire District when they did their capital improvement fund, but I think the time is necessary now to start looking at defining what we need to do, where we think we are in all aspects of the county, whether it's Mark Train, Rainbow Bend, the Highlands, Story County, et cetera. So with your permission, I'd like to get started on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Mr. Gallagher on the capital improvement plan. Oh, thank you. Austin Osborne, for the record. You know, it is time, I believe, that we do have this type of a plan in place. We talked about it during this master plan development. The master plan does have goals and objectives for us developing a capital improvement plan, just as Mr. Gallagher described. Working with this county, with our IT group, our communications group, our public works group, every county or every department group, fire district, we're growing. There's a time when it is time to start putting a structure in place like this. And it would be inconsistent with, or consistent with, the master plan and the work I'm doing so far in the strategic plan. This is the direction, hopefully, that strategic plan that will ultimately be considered by this board would have as well.
Why don't we open up the public comment? No public comment? Well, I think it's a great idea. Let's go ahead and delay this for a few seconds.
Sherry? I wanted to talk with you before you left. Okay, I'll give you a call.
Yeah, I agree with both Hugh and Austin on this. Makes you kind of think, like, how can we have put this in place already? You know, it's a great idea, and because we do have to do some long-term, you know, strategic planning for as the county goes forward here. Keep talking about, you know, how we need to improve county services. So.
Yeah, it is. We kind of have something, but it's basically a list. Yeah. So we really need to kind of look at that list again and see where we stand on each one and kind of maneuver them as needed.
And yeah, maybe put in ink instead of pencil.
Yeah.
Napkins.
Yeah. All right. Any other public comment? Any comments, Mr. Gilman?
No, sir.
All right. You get a motion to approve this?
I hereby move to have the Comptroller's Office develop and report back to the Board of recommendations for a Story County Capital Improvement Plan.
I'll second your motion.
And moved and seconded to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Terrific. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to move on to item number 17, which is we're going to recess the Story County Board of Commissioners and convene as the Water and Sewer Board, which brings us on to number 18, which is discussion and possible action concerning early retirement of the water revenue bond number 91-03 issued on January the 6th, 1997, not to exceed $495,000. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. This is my final item. This also came out of our debt management review from the board. We've looked at it in several years, and I think it's about time. It's a 4.5% bond, and if we pave this thing off in October 1st, it'll save us probably a little bit over $238,000. I have looked at their ending fund balance from 2014 to the present. We started out in 2014 with a little over $554,000 in ending fund balance. 2015, 608, 2016, 690, and here in 2017 of a little over $816,000. So we're not, they're going at about a $50,000 a year rate of increased revenues over expenditures. I don't see anything on the horizon that's going to change that any. I think the fact that it'll save us interest, we'll pay this thing off early, and then that'll get that off our debt management, and I'm pretty sure the water company will be fine.
Okay. Saves us $238,000 in interest?
Yeah.
which is a good thing since we have to spend that much money on new software and hardware, new computer system. We have adequate funds in the water account. Go ahead and pay this off.
Yes. We've got a little over $816,000, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And these and the payments of this bond come out of that account as well, right? So each so
right.
So to exactly. Eliminate the additional interest every year on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good.
Is the amount owed, does that drop paying it off early?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're
yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It,
so you get a kind of a double bonus because the balance due would be smaller.
It's taken about 7 years off the amortization.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'm always for paying stuff off early if we've got the money to save the interest. Any public comment? Any additional board comments? No? Good deal. Get a motion to approve?
Yeah. I hereby make a motion to approve the early retirement of water revenue bond number 91-03, effective October 1st, 2017.
I'll second your motion.
Moved and second. To approve, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Item number 19, we're going to adjourn as the Surrey County Water Sewer Board and reconvene as the Surrey County Board of Commissioners. Which brings us on now to item number 20, which is discussion of possible action. Does anybody need a break before we go any further?
Yeah.
Yeah? I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and take a 10-minute recess, okay?